Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and welcome to our book pick segment for the week. We're always excited when Tuesday rolls around and we have two wonderful booksellers from two wonderful bookstores here to tell us all the books that we should be paying attention to, especially in these days of summer. This morning, we welcome Tara Ludwin from North Shire Bookstore in Saratoga Springs, New York, and Manchester Center, Vermont. Hello, Tara. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Joe?
I'm well. Thank you very much for being here. It's good to see you. We also welcome Kara Weisner from Merritt Bookstore in Millbrook, New York. Hello, Kara. How are you?
I mean, I'm fine now.
So Kara was on her way, and then you ran into some trouble, and you went back. That's all right.
I went back.
Do it by
so
phone.
Now I'm here.
And it's,
in spirit.
It's all good. All right. Thank you very much both for being here. All right, Tara, let's start with you.
All right. Well, I am primarily a children's bookseller, so I'll start us off with some picture books here. I'm going to talk about Stalactite and Stalagmite. It is a picture book, well, told from the perspective of a stalactite and a stalagmite, forming over thousands of years together, and they get to see how the world changes and forms from the earliest creatures coming out of the ocean to dinosaurs and mammals and finally humans. They have a very funny repertoire between the two cave formations as they watch natural history unfold. It's really good for dinosaur lovers or any budding young geologists. It's a very, very fun picture book with beautiful illustrations.
Wonderful. It is called Stalactite and Stalagmite by Drew Beck Meyer, and it is a picture book.
It is a picture book.
Gorgeous. All right, Kara.
It's always so good to have a picture book with, like, for a dinosaur lover. I feel like that's a great, that's like a lot of people come in, and that's like the thing they know about
right?
The child, right? All right, so I'm going to start out with our first edition club pick that we chose for this month. We only do a couple a year, so it's a big deal. This is a book called Culpability by Bruce Holsinger, and it is a family story, a summer story, and a story that weaves in AI in a way that feels so possible and real that I feel like, in a sense, it's the first novel that's woven it in not such a extraordinary way, but in a very kind of ordinary way. And almost sometimes when things are a little bit more subtle, it makes you think about them more. It's definitely also a bit of a page turner. It's written in a kind of sort of clever way, again, because you have a little bit of a computer situation going on. You hear from the points of view of all the different members of the family. So you have some adults, you have some teenagers, and it was, you know, it really grabbed me. It was supposed to come out in October, and it wound up coming out a little bit earlier. And it's just a great, great read.
The name of the new book is Culpability. It is an Oprah Book Club pick for the summer, and it is terrific, excellent. And I'm searching for the name of the author, which I can't find.
Oh, Bruce Holsinger.
There you go, Bruce Holsinger. For the pictures in the sheet that I printed off are cut off, so I apologize. All right, Tara.
We'll go back to me with another picture book for all the ones with little ones. We have Prince and Knight by Daniel Hack. It is a queer normative fairy tale, so like in the vein of your classic Disney prince searching for his true love story. His true love just happens to be a knight who's also a boy, and they fight a dragon together, and they fall in love. This one, too, has beautiful illustrations. They're very vibrant, colorful. The story is super sweet. So if you would like a nice, progressive, inclusive, queer, normative fairy tale in your life, I can't recommend it highly enough.
It is Prince and Knight by Daniel Hack. All right. Prince and Knight. Go, Kira.
All right. So this book actually has a young girl as a main character. So it could be something that older teens might read. And it also is someone, it's Gary Steingart's new book called Vera or Faith. And he, in this kind of similar way of this like weaving AI thing in, his previous novel really wove in the pandemic and COVID and being away in a way that also was like a little bit more real than some of the other things. So anyway, this is called Vera or Faith. It's told through the point of view of Vera, and she is a super clever child, and she's living with parents who are kind of on the edge. It's also a futuristic society, but not so far off. As a matter of fact, some of the things that even have been happening, unfortunately, with ICE and borders and things like that were actually in this book in a kind of strange way of life imitating art or art imitating life, but happening at the same time.
Yeah,
it
maybe
is very clever.
Maybe 6 months into the future.
Right?
Yeah. Go ahead. I apologize for
interrupting. Yeah, no. It reminded me a lot of Miriam Tave's Fight Night. Again, yeah. Like told from this kind of sort of Swiv point of view character. And it's definitely a book where the child seems to know a little bit more than the parents, but also is still very much a child. So the audience knows more than the child. And that's it. It's great.
It is called Vera or Faith by Gary Steingart. Gary was our guest, I believe, this week, I believe, is our guest on the book show. So it'll be on this afternoon at 3 and Thursday night at 8:30. So there you go. Tara.
All right. So my next book is for a little bit older, still little ones. This is going to be more for like second grade readers. The book series is called Murray and Bun by Adam Stower. So this is going to be like the magic and adventure of Magic Treehouse, but with the same kind of humor as like the Piggy and Gerald books by Mo Willems. So our main character is a cat who is a wizard's cat, and the wizard has cast a spell on his cat door. And every time he goes out his door, he ends up in a different time and place in history. So in the first book, he's a Viking. And then in the next book, he's a knight. The third book, he'll be a pirate. So it's all these crazy adventures. And all Murray wants to do is nap and eat snacks because mood. But he ends up having to go on these crazy adventures to get back home with his sidekick, Bun. So it's got, if you're not getting into the Magic Treehouse, maybe they're a little too serious. We want something a little more silly. Murray and Bun is the way to go.
What is it? Is Bun a bunny?
Bun is, yes, very original. He is a bunny named Bun.
Yes. I had a puppet as a child that was like my favorite toy was Bun, the rabbit puppet.
Aw.
Yeah.
And Bun is very little. Like, Bun is somehow smaller than
he's like
Murray,
hamster
which is adorable.
Size.
Yes. You know, one time I brought Bun to show and tell in kindergarten, and Bun somehow got lifted by one of the kids.
Terrible.
It was horrible. So then my parents concocted a story in which Bun went to the quote-unquote hospital while they searched every record they could find of trying to find a new Bun puppet.
Aww.
Which apparently brought them to some weird warehouse in Wisconsin. and then Bun returned and all was happy again.
The peasants rejoiced.
Yes. If only Murray had been with Bun, this would never happen.
No, Murray would have saved him.
No, Murray would be there on the scene. All right, Kara, your turn.
Oh my God, to be filed under the things we do for children. I want to just say that I am listening now to the forthcoming Mona Awad sequel to Bunny. Speaking of bunnies, and it's not out, it's out in the fall, but I just feel like everybody, like, put your seatbelts on and get ready for that. Let me talk now. I'm going to do two books at the same time. The Sisterhood of Ravensbrück by Lynn Olson and Girl on Girl by Sophie Gilbert. These are two books that really celebrate women in very different ways. So for your history lover, The Sisterhood of Ravensbrück takes you into the Ravensbrück concentration camp where the women really gathered together and worked together to protect each other in unbelievable special ways. And then after the war, really worked to make sure that their legacy was remembered when everybody really was just trying to move forward and not look back. Like, we do so much looking back now on the Holocaust and World War II, but at that immediate time, there was a lot of, like, let's move on very quickly. And these women really stayed together to make sure that they were reminding people, like, what happened and what they did and how they took care of each other, which is really, really special. And Girl on Girl is Sophie Gilbert, who writes a lot for The Atlantic and has a great small little slim volume that we keep by the register called On Womanhood. And it's about, it starts out in the 80s and just looking at how women have been treated and how they're seen and the lenses that are shined upon them and the ways that our behavior is very much based on how people have told us we are supposed to behave and how they've seen us, but also then how pop culture echoed that in lots of ways. And I almost feel like we're seeing that similarly now with like the stuff with Sabrina Carpenter, and there are a couple other things that happened this week where women are doing things and then the question is like, why and who has the right and what do you do? And she just explores all of those things and leaves you in a place where you can have a lot of great conversations with anybody who's thinking about women and feminism and just how we do, why we do what we do, how we do it, how it's seen, and what it all might mean.
All right. And that's the one book.
That was a two. So that was Girl on Girl and The Sisterhood of Ravensbrook all at the same time.
All at the same time. Girl on Girl and The Sisterhood of Ravensbrook. Ravensbrook. Lynn Olson is the author of Sisterhood of Ravensbrook, and Sophie Gilbert, the author of Girl on Girl. I'm trying to keep my check marks set here so I have everything. Okay, Tara.
Yeah, well, I did come here to help others add books to their TBR, but now I just added two to mine, so thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
I am going to come back with another kids' book. We're going to get a little bit older again with this one. This book is They Call Me No Sam by Drew DeWalt. I know it's been mentioned on your show a few times now, Joe, but I'm just going to give it another sticker of approval here. This is going to be for like your third, fourth, fifth graders. This is my go-to recommendation for those kiddos who should be outgrowing Dog Man but are really still stuck on Dog Man. I usually get them with this one. It is a good compromise between the graphic novel and a regular prose chapter book. It does have those sentences like a prose book, but it does have plenty of illustrations so that it's not just like one big old page of text. It's very approachable. Drew DeWall is the author of The Day the Crans Quit, so he is just a master at comedy, right?
Yeah, that's
it's so
book.
Funny. And he doesn't get any less funny with this one. It's about a dog who gets adopted by a family, but in his mind, he's the one taking care of them, and they're the weird ones who are like, you know, using the toilet to go to the bathroom when there's a perfectly good rug they could go to the bathroom on so that he can drink the water out of the toilet. You know, he's a very silly pup, but also very intelligent humor. So there's still going to be that silliness that your kids are going to love from Dog Man, but we're going to elevate our humor a little bit too along the way. So yeah, They Call Me No Sam, Drew DeWalt. There is a sequel coming out in October, so now's the perfect time to get into it.
Excellent. They Call Me No Sam. Kira.
Let's talk about a book called Pelican Girls. It's by a French writer named Julia Mile, but she wrote this book in English, and it tells the story of women who were in prison in Paris. I'm sorry, not prison, in a hospital in Paris, but to some degree, some of them were sent there because they were difficult or outspoken. And families really had the right to do things like that with women back in the 1700s. I feel like I'm on a feminist kick here. And not only then were these women in this hospital, but then some of them were selected, sometimes as punishment, but occasionally not, to then be shipped off to New Orleans to be brides for the men who were living there.
Mm.
And so this is, again, a book of, there's a lot of, it's really told through the point of view of the women and the friendships of the women and how they managed to deal the whole time as opposed to, you know, just looking at the whole thing from an omniscient narrator. And they really came through a lot, and they were all very strong, and what they faced in America was really complicated. And even the women who were in charge of the hospital, like, that was not, you know, so clear either, because they were under the pressure of different fancy families and people with money and some government stuff. But it is all based on truth, and it's amazing, again, to kind of recognize all the people who founded this country, the people who are these, you know, the mothers of, you know, people and how America was so many people were shipped off to America because they were not wanted somewhere else, which also may be a metaphor for our times.
Pelican Girls is the name of the book, a paperback too. So if you're looking for that, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Pelican Girls, excellent. Tara.
I'm going to talk about now a middle grade book. So this is going to be for our fourth to seventh graders. It is called The Last Hope School for Magical Delinquents by Nikki Powell Preto. It is a magic school story with a little bit of a mischievous twist. The main character is a super powerful magician, but she doesn't know how to control her magic, and it's gotten her into a lot of trouble. So she ends up at Last Hope School, which, as the name implies, is kind of the end of the road. If she gets expelled here, she's done for. And all of her fellow students are in the same boat she is. All of their magic kind of works in a way that's not what society thinks it should be. And they've all been kind of rejected and thrown out to this school where they can all be misfits together. They get into a lot of magical mischief. There's some dark twists and turns and secrets along the way. We start to realize that maybe the school and magic society isn't all that it appears to be. And now these misfits are going to have to fight for their school and their place in this world. I think a lot of kids will see themselves in that, not quite fitting in the box. It's a good twist on the magic school story if you don't want to be picking up the most popular magic school story for any number of reasons. I can say go ahead and grab this one. It's a good one, and the sequel comes out September 30th, so now's a good time to catch up on the first.
The Last Hope School for Magical Delinquents. Excellent. Kara.
I love this. I'm going to go a little bit. I love this today. I am going to talk about a book called On the Calculation of Volume, and it's five books altogether. The first two are out in also paperback, and the next one will be coming out in the fall. They're translated from the Danish, and this is also a little bit of a magical story. It is a time loop story, and so we meet a woman named Tara, and she has this very interesting day, and she wakes up the next morning, and a little bit like Groundhog Day, it's the same day in a kind of French, sophisticated, not as funny Bill Murray kind of way. And, oh, actually, I think it's seven volumes altogether now that I look at this, but I'm wondering if they're combining it into five for the U.S. But anyway, it's time. She's stuck in November 18th. That's not like spoiling anything. And it just explores so many different things that you could think about. I mean, we've been through these, you know, revisiting a day stories so many times, but this feels new and subtle, and you really just get to think about all the different things that we sometimes don't get to think about. Like, there's a lot about the seasons and about the light and stuff about food, and it's just much more almost minutia, but in a very philosophical way.
Excellent. The name of the new book or books, there's five or seven, or I don't know. It's called On the Calculation of Volume, but we're having trouble calculating it, but that's all right. On the Calculation of Volume, and start with book one, and again in paperback, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. I'm going to go with another middle grade book. Again, that's fourth to seventh grade-ish. The book is called Show Us Who You Are by L. McNichol. This is going to be a book with some really great autism and ADHD rep. The main character, she has autism, and if I'm not mistaken, it's been a little while since I read it, but at the beginning of the book, she's undiagnosed, and she meets a boy who has ADHD, and for the first time, because she is meeting another neurodivergent kid for the first time, she has someone who understands her, and they become really good friends. And her friend's dad is this guy who's like got this hologram company where they're going to make holograms of people so that like after they die, you can go and visit them. And so it's got like this sci-fi aspect to it. Long story short, if I say anything more about the plot, it is going to spoil some pretty key things. So if you're looking for a sci-fi with really great neurodivergent rep, this has not only got some really great representation in the characters, but it's really a celebration of neurodivergence being part of who we are, and you know that it's not something wrong with you. It's something to be celebrated, and I thought that that was a really beautiful message. And yeah, that's from me.
And what the name of the book again is?
Show Us Who You Are.
Show Us Who You Are by L. McNichol. All right. Kara.
All right. I'm going to dovetail into that with my next book club book. So this is an older book, but it's been reissued, I think it was maybe in 2018. And it's called Mrs. Caliban. It's by Rachel Ingalls. And this edition, which is New Directions, has a really beautiful introduction by Rivka Galkin. So this is a story about a woman who is at home and hears on the radio about a creature who's escaped from an oceanic organization in her town. And all of a sudden, this creature appears at her door. But it's enough of person looking that they really bond and form a relationship. It's a very mystical book in a lot of ways. It's a romantic book. It also is a book that lets us think about like women and desire and what it means. And she's in a very delicate place in her life, and having this thing appear in her life becomes a place for her to think about who she was and who she wants to be, as opposed to just continuing on in this marriage. There's like been a tragedy in the family. And so it's a very special book. It's actually a book that so many teachers used to teach writing that when it was out of print for a while, there are a lot of writers, I think it was Rick Moody who told me this once, that it was like people would have Xeroxed copies of it, and they would, you know, because teachers wanted to use it, but you couldn't get it in print and there weren't that many. And so they would, you know, Xerox it to make sure that everybody had a chance to read it. So that's Mrs. Caliban. And I'm doing a book club every other month at the shop. And there's more information about that on our website.
Terrific. Excellent. Tara.
All right. I have another middle grade book. It is Attack of the Black Rectangles by A.S. King. This one's a little bit older, but it feels very relevant to our current timeline. It is a book about a group of kids who are assigned to read The Devil's Arithmetic in school. And as they're reading it, they come across a couple of passages that have been blacked out with Sharpie. So they go on this like mission to find out what got censored in their book and why, and really on this whole fight to push back against censorship in their books. Especially, I mean, this isn't quite a spoiler, but when they find out what was censored out of the book, it has a very misogynistic feel. So there is a bit of feminism in this book as well as fighting back against censorship in banned books. The climax of this book gave me chills when I read it. A very powerful, powerful message, a good story for as big as the themes and the message are. It's definitely told through the lens of these 12-year-olds. It's definitely told in a way that 12-year-olds are going to engage with it. And I had a reader who read it and came back in and followed me around for 20 minutes telling me all of her favorite parts of this book. So if you won't take my word for it, take the kids' word for it.
That sounds like fun. Excellent. And we're out of time. But so my apologies. We got a lot of books in, but we're out of time. So
that was great.
But you can see the complete list on our website, wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. Go to the websites, northshire.com and meritbooks.com. Kira and Tara, thank you so much for being with us. An absolute delight to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Again, you can find the lists at wamc.org/roundtable. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.